This is the beginning of class 11.
Sashi Bhagi Jushin Eta Jam Rira Vinshi Nyande Nyampadi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogu Nanda Shimba Jubashu Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dagni Kapsuchi Dagi Chunyen Dupe Sunamki Dora Penche Sangye Chupasho Sangye Chodan Sangye Chodanma Chanchu Badu Dami Kapsuchi Dagi Chumyen Dipe Sunamki Jola Penche Sangye Jupa.
When we debate this subject in the monastery, it's with a different text. And they say, what's the difference between insight and quietude? And the object is the same. They both look at Jinyevichu and Jitawichu, which means, Jinyevichu means everything there is, the things that are. And Jitawichu means the way things are. So they both focus on the same object, the things that are and the way things are. And they both have the same essence. They're both...
same level of concentration.
They're both tingenzen. They're both shamatha. Based on shamatha or shamatha. And then the only difference between them is whether or not they are analyzing the object or not.
So one is analytical.
They're both fixed on the object. They're both a kind of fixation on the object. But vipassana is analyzing the object.
So analytical versus single point.
Analytical are all put into perfect order. All throughout your body, the inner winds are put into perfect order because your mind is in perfect order. Based on that, you start to feel bliss in your body. And because of that, you feel happy and you start to feel bliss mentally. So those are what the bliss means. It means those four steps going on. Because of that, you feel happy and you start to feel bliss mentally. So those are what the bliss means. It means those four steps going on. In your body. Your mind starts to concentrate better, therefore the winds straighten out. Because the winds are straightened out, you feel bliss. And because you feel bliss physically, you're happy. You feel better mentally. So that's what Dewa Kepa Chen means, of Shinja. That's what exceptional bliss of practice ease means.
The difference between both being... I don't understand the difference.
So shamatha is more the fixation on the object. And vipassana is the analysis of the object sitting on the shamatha.
The analysis of the object is still single-pointed concentration from moment to moment of the analysis, right?
Yeah.
And the only difference is, so I'm have single-pointed concentration on the image of the Buddha, and I'm not thinking about anything.
Well,
I'm
there's
just
a debate,
it.
You know, is this whole Amrim outline, if you go through the whole thing and do a shargal,
yeah.
If you meditate on this outline, which is what I'd like you to do in the next 6 months. I mean, it'd be nice if you got to the point. This is the roadmap to Buddhahood. Mm. And if you know it, it's burned into your mind. You always know where you're at. You always know where you've reached. So can you get single-pointed concentration on these, you know, 11 pages of text? Yes. Is it... What does say chik mean? What does single pointed mean? What's the single
focus
point?
Focus on one object.
One object. Single object. The word point is a code word for object. There's nothing single pointed about it except that it's focused on one object. Is this one object?
Yes.
There was a big debate about it in Tibet. And the Ranglu, our side says, It is. It's a single object. That whole meditation is a single object.
So you're not shifting the object of meditation slightly as you move from one section to the other?
You are. You are. So we call it one object. We consider it one object.
Is that the difference between the two? The one you shift from object to object and the other you stay with one object?
We claim that this is staying with one object.
Then what's the difference between
shamatha
means, and shamatha?
Oh, shamatha is the state of the meditation, of the concentration. Well, shamatha is the concentration.
Well, insight.
Because jhana is the analysis based on that concentration. You can have shamatha towards a worthless object.
I'm trying to understand what analysis means, let me see.
Oh, normally it means the emptiness of the object. But it can also mean the dependent origination of the object.
So it is single point of concentration focused on emptiness.
Focused on the nature. The concept, the ability, that incredible ability of shamatha comes first. Remember, that's above the ninth level.
Yeah.
Ninth level was kind of, okay, very, very close. And based on that ability to concentrate, you focus on the nature of an object.
So
perceive its dependent origination or its emptiness.
So let's see if I understand it correctly. Both are focused on one object. The only difference is that in vipassana, you're perceiving emptiness, independent or dependent origination, and shamatha you're not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shamatha, you could be. Yeah. Shamatha is just a tool.
Then it wouldn't be.
Could be focused. It's a microscope. Could be focused on the right thing. In that case, it's vipassana.
Right.
Could be focused on a horn, and in that case.
Michael, the way you just spoke about Chargon, according to the Baruch position, then Chargon is really a subset of Jhana.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that. For us, there's a way of doing this. There are many books written about your question, and I would say there's a way of doing the Lam Rim meditation where you don't go on until you get that Lam Rim. Now that's going to take years.
So, you mean that particular verse?
Yeah,
say.
Until you actually internalize it. Until it actually becomes that. So until you actually see your Lama as a Buddha, you're not allowed to go on. Uh-huh. You know, and that could take a long time. So I personally would suggest the other method is that you just keep going. I would like that by the next course, I could sit down and I could read you one of these and I'd say, what's the next one? And you'd all go, oh, it's...
So it's better to go through the sequence than to have depth of each level?
Yeah. My own, what I've found is you take three or four and burn them in during one session for about 3-4 days. You know?
Get
burned.
Yeah.
It comes from Shanti Deva. Atishak. Who, it took him 12 years to find Serlingba in Indonesia. Something like that. See, that's a true story. It took him that long to get there. He went by ship. And when he got there, he didn't go asking to be his teacher. He spent, I don't know how many months, checking the teacher out before he ever approached him. He went to all his students. He asked, what kind of person is he reliable? What does he teach? What does he know? Because he didn't want to get into that karmic responsibility of treating the teacher correctly before he knew that he was good. So he spent, he risked his life to this wooden boat in 1100 AD from the Indian Peninsula to Indonesia, you know, like a crazy man. And when he got there, he didn't go straight to Serlingba. He waited a long time to check him out.
So what is the recommendation to us?
My lama always used to say, well, you guys don't have much choice. I'm the only one around. You have to be careful. In New York, I think you get more in-transit lamas than anywhere. So you only see the lama for a few days. I think that's a very delicate situation. You have to try to find out as much as you can about it before you. And when I learned that teaching, then I started to do that in my college. I was still in college, and I used to go to try to find out. It made sense, maybe I should find out about this professor before I sign up for this course. It was amazing how little they had information about them. You know, you couldn't really find out much about them. And apparently no one ever asked, you know, before they took them. You're exposing your precious mind to this person. You better find out.
Yeah, but Michael, it's not enough that you do the research. You also have to have that connection with the person.
I'd say both. You see, if you memorize the text, you will see this outline in it.
Right. Mm.
This is the skeleton of that text. If you strip away the meat, right. You know, this is what's underneath that text. And you will see it once you study this for a while. And I put the text here. It tells you where you're at in the poem according to Baboka, and you'll see that that's correct. When you compare the verse to the outline, you'll see, oh yeah, this is where I am. So that's a very everything is here. How to get to Nirvana, how to wipe out your kleshas. Everything is in here. Everything is complete in that. So it's a very worthy object on which to develop shamatha.
But I'm still a little curious whether you want us to do anything more than essentially memorize it and understand the way that the points are implied in the poem. So we understand how the structure of the Amrimas is implied in the poem. Then we have that memorized.
Content of texting, that's all I can do. I can't explain it much in detail. But you must have this background. Once you have tonight's subject headings in your mind, you are eligible to take an initiation. To take that, if Rinpoche agrees to give it to you personally. But you have legally the training that you're required to have from this course. So then you would be eligible to.
Michael, didn't you say you were going to talk about what it meant to take the initiation?
That's what I'm going to do right now.
Okay.
So. We're talking about this very last stage here. It says, entering the diamond path, once you have made your mind a worthy vessel and have taken the four empowerments in a pure form. So entering the diamond path is a word for tantra. Once you have made your mind a worthy vessel, and in the root text, it's tumon lamjan nud gyurpana, means... How do you make your mind worthy? How do you become eligible to have this thing poured into your mind? Is by studying the Lamrim and practicing the Lamrim. All those stages before here, okay? All those steps before this point that are in the outline, if you know them fairly well, minimum, if you've practiced them somewhat, or even master some of them. This, just being aware of them, having a good understanding of them, is minimum for permission to even get an initiation, to even get an empowerment. You have to be pretty familiar with everything in the Lamrim in this outline.
Empowerment means initiation?
I'll talk to you about it.
Okay.
So once you're...
Diamond path again?
Diamond path means the way of Tantra. It's called diamond. Vajrayana. Vajra means diamond. I think that was the greatest crime of all. If you had a chance to take one and follow it and reach a high level, and then because you didn't know what to do, it didn't work, and then you began to think in the back of your mind, in the back of your heart, which is evidenced by your failure to practice them every day, you just think they don't work. They didn't work very well. Yeah.
You know, Michael, doesn't it take a certain amount of time to... I mean, I don't want to get into all the specifics of it, but, you know, doesn't it take a certain amount of time? It's such an alien concept to our way of thinking that how can you know if you're practicing well or if you're practicing well enough or, you know, I would think there's got to be a certain grace period of just getting your mind into it to, you know, it's a gradual thing. It's just like, you know, thinking about the concept of emptiness. I mean, as every year goes by, you're going to get more... I mean, I know in the 2 years I've been studying, my concept of it is much more solid now, you know, than it was as solid as I felt it was in the beginning. You know, and karma and all this, it should be gradual. You can't think that you're going to go straight into it and be... You know, sometimes when you talk about it, it's like, you know, what is practicing well, what is not practicing well, what is getting there, what is, you know, it's confusing. It's a little...
Yeah, but there's this initial period where, like in the meditation, you think you're getting worse because you're just noticing what was going on all along. And after that, Yoshitoge used to say, and I think it's a good observation, that you should be getting happier. If you have any kind of minimum practice going on, you should be finding yourself more contented, more happy. And if you're not, then I'd say you're not. You don't have to say that you have to practice like a fanatic, because it doesn't make people happy often. But you're getting the essence of like caring for other people, and that can make you happy almost immediately. I think if you start practicing any kind of concern or compassion for the people around you, where? At work, on the subway, in the bus station.
Preliminary to that is just
to cut your arm off if you're at the vegetables. You should be giving them asparagus.
Well, I mean, it requires a certain amount of a bad mind to begin with. This stuff was not developed for perfect beings. It was developed for imperfect beings who wanted to go there, right? So I think it requires a sort of a minimum commitment in the beginning to stick with it and to have faith and to apply the best of your abilities at that time and then to increase them gradually as it goes on.
Yeah.
People should get the idea that it's so difficult that
that's just it. I mean, a lot
it's not
going
to work and you have to go right into it.
In my mind, sometimes I can't be as joyous as I can be practical sometimes, because the joy is like, well, I don't know if what I'm doing is right. I don't know if it's, you know, if I'm really getting any virtue. I don't know how much, if any. You know what I'm saying? And I have this concept that the negativity that I'm creating for myself is much higher than whatever virtue it is. So the joy, I mean, you know what I mean? Because we talk about virtue in such a way that it's confusing, and I don't know if, you know, it's just a confusing concept, and it's, maybe you can explain it.
In a pure lineage, and it should not have been corrupted by any corrupt practices during that lineage. So the lineage has to be pure.
And I know that.
Very difficult, especially before you start. I think that's a difficult question. Before you start, it's very hard to tell. I think you might be somewhat able to judge it by the quality of the open teachings that the person gives you before he gives you the initiation. That's about the only way you can establish it. After you have been admitted, after you've been given the initiation, then you can ask questions about, well, can you tell me, you know, where did this come from? Who are the teachers who gave this initiation? Where did this lineage come from? Can you show me the texts in the Kangyur Tengyur in the canon? You know, where this lineage came from, or this teaching that you're giving, can you really show me what the sources are? And a teacher should be able to say, yeah, here, and point it out to you. This came from the Buddha himself, and that I haven't added anything, or my teacher didn't add anything, we didn't change anything, and it hasn't been corrupted by some strange practices. So,
excuse me, Michael. Yeah. How was it determined in Tibet a long time ago who would get an initiation? Who would take one?
They used to be very, very, very... There was called Shelshepa, which means from the mouth of the Lama. And students were initiated in groups of one or two. And there are certain famous students who never were initiated by the Lama. You'd be surprised at the list. You know, you might be surprised that so-and-so was never granted a certain initiation from this group of...
Even though they perhaps
wanted
it.
They lived together for 20 years or something, and he just never... The Lama never felt comfortable. But in the old days, the pledge is defined as something that you shouldn't give up. A vow is more like a restraint. The word in Tibetan means a restraint. You know, not to undertake a bad deed. So I guess a pledge is more something that you've pledged to do, and a vow is more something that you've pledged not to do. And you're not allowed to know them or to get them until you take the initiation. You have to take the initiation to be granted those pledges and vows.
What's the reason for not knowing what that is beforehand?
In some kinds of vows, you are taught beforehand. Like of the three vows, tantric, bodhisattva, and vow of morality, some of them you're required to study them beforehand. but not in time for your secret. So can't, not allowed to tell you them until we take you.
Why is that? Why can't they tell you?
I think they would reveal. You have to have permission. I can't tell you.
I was taught that that was because if you requested initiation, you should be so willing or so so desirous of having initiation that it wouldn't enter, it shouldn't enter into your mind what the commitment is, that you shouldn't weigh it in that way, like, well, I'll only take it if I can get away with like 100,000.
I haven't, I don't know about that. Sounds good. I haven't seen that explanation. Okay. There's a lot of things I haven't seen. Okay. So that's, you must keep your vows pure. And I would, I think it's correct to say, if things are as they seem, that many people who've taken initiations can't even tell you what vows they took, much less keep them. And if you don't keep them, nothing will happen. At the best, nothing will happen. He was like, he was supposed to become the head of the Temple College. He was in the, he was like the provost or something like that. So he's very qualified to give it correctly. All right. C, on page 11, is how to meditate upon the two levels of Tantra once you've kept your pledges and vows pure. So there are two steps in Tantric practice, two levels of practice, and they don't work until you are keeping your vows well and your pledges well. And that's what I was saying the other day. I don't know if it's with you guys, but in a way, Tantra is secret for the reason that you will never see anything if you don't keep your vows. It's self-secret, self-protecting secret thing, you know. You will never see it if you don't keep your vows well. Okay. And if you do keep your vows well, and you didn't want to see it, you still would see it.
E and C.
Can't you say what a vow is? Or not the definition of a vow, but the vows that they're talking about? Is that?
Well, a vow means that you swear that you won't do certain things anymore.
Is that a
feeling?
Lama
Nyeji. That's the first 14. Anyway, like that, you have to pledge not to do certain things. All right. If you keep those vows well, then you can achieve the two stages of time. I could describe them to you. It'd probably be nice to. I'm looking forward to it someday, but not right now. I can't. And again, if we were pure in the morality, even at the level we have now, you might have deep understanding of what these are talking about already. Okay, so that's my Tantra advertisement for the initiations this summer. I don't know if Rinpoche will be in a position to do that again, so I think it would be good to do it if you can. But we do have to ask him properly. So maybe, you know, when I get back from India, we'll see how we, you know, maybe I'll call you or something and see if you want to be on a list. And he asked me to give him a list of people that he would consider that list.
Has something gone out in the mail about this?
Yes, somebody yes, said I got it out.
Yeah, a mailing went out. If you didn't get it, it means you're not on the mailing list. So you might want to.
But I have it. If anyone wants to look at it.
But I'd still like to get you on the mailing list in case something changes. Okay. So if you didn't get one, come up to me afterwards.
Right on Tuesday.
Name out.
It's from the Washington.
Then the next to last verse in the practice is just just praying that the things that could stop you won't stop you, and praying that you can collect all the causes that you need to succeed. Faith, do you want to turn on the...
Sure.
Do you want to crack open the door you guys bought?
Yeah.
And then the last verse of the text is a prayer that you meet lamas in all your future lives. And, you know, I've said before, I try to imagine life without my teacher, but I can't think about it. You know, I think it would be very terrible. So, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to not to have stayed with him. So, you know, you have to pray that you get that control.
Closer to getting to your teacher.
That's a good question. Let me ask Rinpoche. Okay, I'd like to...
You can have more than one lama with him. Like, some lamas bring some things in your life, teach you some things.
Excuse me?
Is something wrong?
No,
you know what? Excuse me, it's really my fault, but this is your review class. I'm feeling really uncertain. It's 20 past something.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll get there. We'll review everything. Do you have... could you have more than one lama?
No, that's not what I mean. But you could have a close relationship, more than one. And
oh, sure.
And each one could bring something there important.
Yeah, yeah, sure. We're talking about the one that is, it's like the lady of your life.
It's also possible that...
What category does that go in? You say, number 13. I don't mean memorize the numbers, but the sequence is logical, by the way. Yeah, obviously. You know, first you find a teacher, then you try to stay out of the hell, and then you try to stay out of animals, and then you try to go up, and then you try to help other people. It's logical, and you'll see the logic of it. So it's a very precious thing. It's a very valuable thing. So meditate on it.
Does memorizing it so well and having it in your mind so well is part of the point of that, so that when you die and you lose most of your control and your consciousness, that it's ingrained in your mind that the elements of it will be there? Is that part of this?
It's life? A little part of it, but I'll tell you what Kobunka would have said. He'd say, you know, don't talk to me about your future life. You're going to practice Tantra and finish it all now. This is not going to be relevant to you. It's not going to apply to you.
Okay. Presuming you practice Tantra correctly. I mean,
well, you are. Requesting blessings.
Well, you can keep merit before you request blessings.
Well, like requesting blessings is a great virtue also, so you can pray for that. Okay, so that was the preliminaries. The second was what?
Environment.
Yeah, the environment. What were those?
Water and air and how to allow biomass.
Six conditions.
The first was the place.
Yeah,
it was a good place.
If you want.
And that had five minutes. Characteristics itself. But I wouldn't expect you to get in such detail. Huh?
A few needs.
Yeah, few needs.
Easy satisfaction.
Satisfied.
Give up doing too many things.
Is this part of those five that we don't have to...
And then morality.
Wasn't there another giving up?
No, yeah.
Giving up harming other people.
Of worldly desire.
Giving up too many... Yeah.
Doing too many things.
There was giving up doing too many things, and then there was...
Not thinking.
And then morality from not harming.
Mental technique. We discussed the number of problems and the number of corrections. What are the... How many problems?
Five.
Yeah. Which are... debated these yesterday. We got to debate out fine yesterday. It's such a nice day. We're out on the lawn. It's great.
The
laziness. Meaning what? I mean, I hope you never. I hope you never teach it to your students as dryly as laziness. You know, and I hope they never understand it as laziness. It's. As laziness. You know, and I hope they never understand it as laziness. It's being tucked in bed warm and the alarm goes off and says, maybe not today. And I do it. I know it very well. So it's really not wanting to do it. It's not having the heart to do it. I'm not feeling like it. So the word is laziness, but I don't like the word too much. And we debated it the other day in our debate with the monks. And it came up. Okay, second problem. Good half hour, good 45 minutes. But so often and so well looking out for Qinghua. Okay, that subtle dullness, which is the opium that ruins your life's meditation. Okay, you know, if you get into a Qinghua track, you can keep that up for years, and you'll never know what happened afterwards. The big danger, so watch out for that. So anyway, that won't happen to you, and cannot happen to you if you're not meditating every day. You cannot proceed into this. It will never happen. If you are meditating daily, it will happen someday. So that's the selling point. That's attraction. Second one?
Wish to do it.
Yeah. By the way, in a worldly sense, if all you care about is your career or blah blah blah, still shamatha is a great way to get ahead. You can focus it on anything and do it pretty damn well. Okay. So what was the second one?
One.
That's one. Just kidding. What was the third one?
Meaning
working to get it. And number four?
Practice
these, meaning that untranslatable pliancy, agility. Rinpoche calls it gymnastics. Gymnastic ability. Anyway. Okay. That's obviously not, by the way, the exceptional practice piece that is comes in the definition of what? Shamatha and Vipassana. It's not the one mentioned there, obviously. It's obviously a lower level. Okay. Alright. Problem number two.
You lose the output.
Which is called
forgetting
instructions. And I hope when you teach your students, you don't just repeat forgetting the instructions and then the lineage breaks. They never figure out that it meant losing the object. It means losing the object. Then what happens?
Recollection.
Now, a lot of people have good questions. I've studied it more. Is it to recollect what you were doing when you find out you lost the object? Or is it an awareness that you don't lose the object in the first place? I explained it the first way. The scriptures I've read since then are emphasizing more the second way.
Doesn't it depend on which state you are, as to the level of
it would,
and
it would.
To how it's functioning?
It could have both functions, but mainly it's watching out to see whether or not you are losing the object. And when we debated it yesterday, we just came out with it has to be all three, really. It's functioning as a kind of awareness that you don't lose the object. It's functioning as you begin to lose the object, and it functions after you lose the object to bring you back to the object. So it really has three functions. But the main one is described as not losing the object in the first place. So how then does it differ from shishin, from watchfulness, which comes later? Quality of the subject and not of the object. That's difficult to remember. Clarity so often seems to imply of the object. But this is like when you say, yeah, I'm real clear on that.
Is intensity a greater degree of clarity? Is that what?
Yeah, it's always described as cell chain, which means the intensity of the clarity. Good question. Okay. There was a bad question on one of the quizzes. It said, how do you know that the fourth problem has occurred? Some people got it wrong. What is the fourth problem?
Not taking action.
How do you know when it's occurred? That question wasn't very good. It's really, how do you know when something's occurred that you should be taking action about? And you can answer watchfulness. Okay. Because watchfulness actually occurred before you didn't take action. Okay. I would say that the nine states of meditation are pretty important to know. And everyone got them very good on the quiz. I was amazed. It made me feel bad. I should have asked you more questions on the earlier quizzes. Because everybody did them really good. And I could never recite those.
Is that why, after that, we started getting so many more questions on the homework?
I realized I had some.
That was the day you left them on the board, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Name three different types of meditation. Oh, no. You have to know the outline pretty well, okay? And that's another reason why I printed it out. Anything on the outline that came in the quizzes, you should review. And that's why I did that whole handout. So now it's real clear to you how it works on the outline. So I won't give you anything on the outline that you didn't have on your quizzes.
You mean you won't
be able to take our exam? This final exam comes only from the quizzes. So if you know all the parts of the outline that ever appear in any of the quizzes, you're okay. But you better know.
So it's like you mean to say, like, here, fill in, like, write an outline. That's the quiz.
Yeah, here's the whole outline, and you can even you know, put a mark on the ones that come in the quizzes and concentrate on those. Okay. If someone were to ask you the four laws of karma, don't blindly put karma is certain as the first one. Try to explain it a little, because it ain't what it sounds like, is it?
What?
It doesn't mean that you definitely get a result. It means what?
It means that if you get the good actions result in positive.
The content is true. Certainty is in the content. Good leads to good and bad leads to bad. That's what it means to be certain. Sometimes I think they should never call it that anyway, in the first place. That you can stay fixed on the object for about 3 hours without a single distraction. And as I said, there's this process where that ability straightens out the psychic wings. And that straightening of the psychic wings causes bodily, a sensation of bodily bliss. And then that becomes something that makes you happy, and then you end up with that's the definition and the description of how exceptional bliss occurs.
Exceptional.
That's all I have.
I don't want to take time if you're continuing to review, but
no, that's it. That's all the review.
What is psychic wins? What exactly does that mean?
I think it's what, you know, generally Buddhism discourages real Buddhism. As you've been getting a good taste of it, discourages these vague mystical things, you know.
You mean like channeling?
Because they're vague. When you've had the proper initiation, I think you could go into it. I'm not kidding. You know, there are good descriptions of it, and very detailed descriptions of it. But right now, you can say it's a kind of energy or force in the body on which the related to your physical body, which is sort of where the thoughts and the physical body meet. And the thoughts are carried along those, along by those wings. And that's all I can say. But when you are ready to study the whole subject, there's whole books written about it, and they're very precise and very clear, and you can try do with the practices that are required, and you get some result. It's very, very bad to try to do any of that before you get formal teaching. And many people have had terrible experiences because of that.
Is it like Kundalini?
I don't know Kundalini as much. You know? But you'll know when the time comes. Any other questions? No.
Thank you for teaching.
Oh, my pleasure. My good luck. Otherwise, I'd be watching TV. but I say, be happy. You know, be glad. Very rare opportunity. There's a joke in Tibetan that when there's a teacher around, there ain't no students, and when their students are ready, the teacher is gone already. So it's very, very good virtue, and what we're doing is very, very, very excellent. And I'm very also happy to see how everyone is helping each other. Except I'm a homer, but I'm not. No, but I love to see, it's a pleasure to see. I mean, Dharma, the result of Dharma should be at least that we should be good to each other. And I think, I see it, you know, I see that everyone's being good to each other. That's a nice that's a good sign. They call it the stink of Dharma. It's the fragrance of Dharma. When people are getting warm with each other and people go, come out and then they're better people. Because just to know everything and not be a better person is a pretty miserable state. And we are in danger of becoming like that. The more you learn, the more you better be getting Dharma sweet. Because if you're not, then nothing can change you later. You've used up all the things that could possibly have changed you. So you got to be careful, man. He just asked me, Tim asked me to give you Rinpoche's name. And that's his. He's a Ken. Rinpoche is a very overused word, but it basically means a lama who's reached the state where he will be reincarnated as a lama in his next life. And Ken means short for Kenbo, which means an abbot. And sometimes people nowadays are giving the word Kenbo to somebody with three monks in their monastery. I guess it is. But in our tradition, it's reserved for someone who's been ahead of one of the major six monasteries. And Geshe is someone who's finished, nowadays it means someone who has finished the entire 18 or 20 year course and passed in the monastery. Although there's a lot of people using the word Geshe now who are not real Geshes in our tradition. Lobsang is his ordination name. Losam Tachin. Losam means pure mind, and it comes from the Tsongkhapa's first name. And Tachin means gone to the end, reached the end. His root lama was Kyabje Tujia Rinpoche, who was the teacher of the present Dalai Lama, one of the two teachers, two tutors. And he was the main disciple of Babonka. And Rinpoche also studied under Babonka directly for many years as a young man. Babonka passed away in the 40s. He's from Serame Monastery. At the Tantra College, unless you were a Tharampa Geshe, which means one of the top two or three in your class. So there would only be about a handful of those each year.
Why were they so much more strict? Why do we have such a difference now?
It's still a tradition that you don't get into the Tantra colleges even now unless you're a Tharampa Geshe. You're not considered an automatic entrant unless you are a Tharampa Geshe. But you can apply and you might be accepted if you have other reasons to be there. And there are monks who never go, who just go and learn the rituals and never go to their Geshe studies also. There's a certain class of monk who can do that.
But even originally,
like Namgyal Master, much of their studies are like that.
But even
they become ritual masters. Yeah.
The Buddha didn't want. I mean, originally, like you said, there were many.
He asked me. Tim asked me where Rinpoche is right now. It's a Mongolian temple.
I have a question. Rinpoche. I always thought that meant will be incarnated.
It can mean that also.
Oh, so the precious gem.
It does mean. It means a precious thing, and it can mean gem. There's seven kinds of Rinpoches: gold, silver, and then gemstones.
Well, how do you tell if it's when it's listed out that they have been reincarnated from?
If they say Rinpoche, it either means, normally it means that they are already a reincarnated lama. Mm-hmm. And in some rare cases, someone has disqualified now, and he'll be a reincarnate in the future. The Dalai Lama gives a chakra, some kind of lesson.
But there's no real way to tell that
unless you ask. Yeah, and they're not supposed to say sometimes. So.
Is this lineage involved with the FPMT then?
We are the same lineage, yeah. They're from the second best monastery. Usually beat that. According to Mahayana. I'll tell you, Sarajay is really damn great Tibetans. Great tradition of studies. Among all the great monasteries, they're studying very well. Okay.
I have a question.
One more, last question.
All right. Rinpoche achieved his post to be initiated, or do you chosen him to be initiated, by or by Rinpoche?
Oh, first you have to request. He's not allowed to give it to you unless you ask. And I think what I'll do is ask Margie to call up people and see if they want me to put their name down. Mm-hmm. Then I have to go to him and request. And maybe a group of us should do. Normally you present some flowers and very respectfully ask. It's kind of gotten convoluted in the West because we don't know enough to ask at the right time.
Michael, please return and teach.
Oh, yeah.
Please do not die.
What is that? Yes. What day is the teaching
for you? 24th.
Is there a class tomorrow? Sorry. Yeah, there is.
And that's a Sunday.
At some point in the next few weeks, I'd like to get a team and go out and paint Rinpoche's garage for him. He likes that kind of stuff. So I'll let you know.
When is the next class?
The next course will be on Pramanavartika, which is the root text on the study of perception and logic. What, you know, how do you know what you see is true? You know, what is truth? How do you know when something is true? Meaning perception or fact? And that's important. It's a mind-only school. It's very important. And we're going to study the chapter, which is not taught in the West much, because no one gets to it unless you go to the winter debates for about 6 years. And almost nobody gets through 6 years of winter debates. In my class, two people got through to the fifth year. So it's...
What happens to them?
It's hard. That chapter is devoted to proving that... that there's a past lives and future lives, and proving how the world was made and what creates human life, and then proving that it's possible to bring the mind to a state of perfection. And that's devoted to those things. And that came from an ancient dispute between the Buddhists and a Hindu school called the Gyanpembas, who said that it was impossible. And that they said that there was no past life, and that your mind starts when you're conceived, and your mind dies when your body dies, and the world was made by this big guy who has all the power to make the world, and that, and ideas like that. And so this ancient debate that sounds some familiar, you know. It's very, very good, very, very useful. And they said that you could not perfect the human mind, that the human mind is basically defective and could never become pure. So then the Buddhists tried to prove it. And they're very good debates. We did this debate in front of a Catholic girls' school last week. And yesterday, this good group called me up and said, we'd like to come to Buddhist classes.
Wow.
So it was nice. I mean, if you do it properly, it's... we didn't convince anybody or ourselves, but we proved that it's possible.
So what did you do? You just decided to walk onto their lawn and do this debate?
No, they came to the temple for a visit, for a lecture. Awesome. Oh. So I just called the other monks and said, let's debate. Let's debate whether or not there's a past life. Can you prove it to me? And they tried, for like 2 hours. They did it in Tibet and I translated. And I said, that's not a proof, you know, and you got to find us a good proof. And we went on and on and on, and finally we got to a point where everyone in the room agreed that, well, it's probable that they were compromised, and that's enough, you know. So it's great. So that's my, that's what we'll do next course. Probably late June to early August. Starting late June.
Alphabet class?
Yeah, I think we'll still do an alphabet class in April, maybe once a week. Light class, just to learn how to draw the letters and stuff. And I want to teach it to a few people like Tupin Ernst and surge, and then they'll teach it from then on. From after that, they'll be the teachers of that. So if you want to come to that, that's good. It's a way to learn in 2 nights how to pronounce Tibetan perfectly. And most people never do.
How will we find out about the class? How will we find out when the class is?
I think I'll ask Margie to call around.
Which is great if you're on our list.
If you suspect you're not on the list, meaning if you didn't get that thing from Washington D.C. about the classes, about the initiations thing, come up and put your name. Okay. Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
Sashi Bhakti Jashin Neta Sham Rira Vinci Nyante Yampati Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shingla
This is the end of Class 11. You have been listening to Applied Meditation with Geshe Michael Roach, presented by the Asian Classics Institute. The Asian Classics Institute is dedicated to preserving the pure teachings and practice of Buddhism. For a listing of other topics available, write to the Asian Classics Institute.